favorite scary movie. Have you checked the children?
It's all for you!
We have such sights to show you.
No, this will be fine. Because we're all really good at pronouncing Italian names.
Right, and also, we can just, you know, dub it over later on.
Like they did in this movie.
We can totally do it. Yeah, we'll just hire some people, totally different sounding podcasters.
Just get Last Podcast.
Yeah. the same delivery and everything.
Same delivery, yeah.
Oh, that'd be fantastic.
Totally unannounced cameo drop. Right.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I want Ben to read my lines.
I'm Alex Winterline.
Oh, the visual is fantastic.
That would mean, Ben would read my lines, Henry would read yours.
Yeah, I'm the shortest, that makes sense.
Yeah, and that would de facto make Marcus would read yours.
Yes, that's true. The stalwart.
The most level-headed to
me. That's true, despite us being the main people on this podcast.
In some ways, I feel that way because clearly Alex has not read the Google Doc.
He's the only one that did the homework.
Well, sometimes we'll have guests who'll be like, "Oh, like they'll want the outline ahead of time."
They'll have notes.
I have notes. I have my own notes.
You're so prepared. I finished the last 10 minutes at my desk today.
I had to rewatch the second half twice because I was playing Ninja Turtles.
You can't.
I know. That's why I went back. I'm like, no, I missed too much.
Yeah, you did.
I've seen the movie a few times, so
no,
I'm
but like
the cultural milestone. You're playing Ninja Turtles.
Yeah, it's a great movie. It's a good game. Also very colorful. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, can we just get started?
Let's go, let's do it, yeah!
Dear Lord. All right, welcome back, everyone, to another episode of the Horrible People's Podcast. I am your host, Alex Webster. With me, as always, is Anthony Fuentes.
That's right, my April O'Neil Ninja Turtles is level 10, baby. Let's go.
Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. And joining us this week, welcome back, Adrian.
Hello, hello. Thank you. Thank you for having me again.
Frank, also very good at Shredder's Revenge, I must say.
Yeah. Dude, I fucking kicked ass.
That was a good game.
We played for an hour, but I kicked ass.
Was that your first time playing it?
Yeah, that was my first time.
They're just at the bar, they're having beers and doing the Nintendo Switch commercial
thing. I saw
the
Instagram story. It's fine.
One IPA in, and I'm like fucking getting my ass kicked.
Right. I'm like, save me, save me. Good time.
Good job, guys. Yeah. Anyway, today we are covering, well, first of all, welcome to July.
That's right.
It's July.
It's season finale month, baby. This is the last month of the season. Season four.
Holy shit.
I know. We got a slew of episodes. I think we teased it a little bit last time, but in case you guys signed off before we were able to, you know, plug it. I'm going to plug it right now. We have a lot of really, really good stuff to top off the season. So we have our 1977 Italian Giallo masterpiece, which we're reviewing today.
Correct.
We have a 2022 movie, actually, next week.
I'm so excited.
We both loved it so much, we're like, we're not even going to do it in our final review.
In a roundtable,
yeah. We're not going to do that. We're going to actually give it a time.
Yeah, it gets an episode all on its own.
On its own. And, of course, then we're going to talk about an internet phenomenon that was very, very fascinating and very, very much for people of my generation. So it's going to be a really good time. But of course, today, the aforementioned 1977 Italian flick, Mr. Sanchez, what we be talking about, buddy?
Suspiria.
Hey!
Yes. Yeah! Oh, quick note. At the end of the episode last week, we mentioned that it was going to be an OG versus remake. Anthony, would you like to explain to the people
Would you like to explain yourself?
Yeah.
So it turns out, there's a lot of stuff going on with the 2018 remake, like way more than I anticipated. So I was like, okay, I cannot fit both of these things into one episode.
That's fair. It's a really dense movie.
It's like, so much like theory. Yeah. And the behind the scenes is really like tumultuous as well. So I was like, okay, cool. That's its own thing. That's its
long runtime.
Yeah. Way longer than this movie.
Yeah. But I love it too, though.
I'm willing to give it a second shot because we saw it together. Actually,
I think Anthony was falling asleep.
That's
brutal.
I thought it looked really good though. Yeah, it's a good looking movie. No, it does. Very good looking.
Fantastic.
So yeah, that's its own episode sometime in the future. So we're just gonna focus on Mr. Argento today, but Mr. Sancho Gento.
Good one.
What does IMDb say? That was good.
He said it so enthusiastic. He's like, yeah, that was good one.
Good joke,
it's
bro.
Be one of those.
Great.
Spitting out my drink right now.
Ha ha. Ha ha.
IMDb, please.
All right. The IMDb synopsis. An American newcomer to a prestigious German ballet academy comes to realize that the school is a front for something sinister amid a series of grisly murders.
Huh.
Okay.
They haven't been doing that bad lately. What's going on? Did they hire somebody?
They listen to the podcast. Oh, they're like, we gotta get our shit together.
Yeah, they're like, they keep
people are reading
shit.
This.
Nobody's supposed to read these.
The screenplay is by Dario Argento and Daria Nicolodi?
Nickelodeon.
Also directed by Dario Argento.
That's right.
And yay. The film is starring Jessica Harper, Stefania Cassini, Flavio Bucci, and Miguel Bozzi.
I like those names.
Those are all good names.
Yes. Flavio. I'm going to name something Flavio at some point.
I thought you were going to be like, I'm going to name my first son Flavio. And I was like, that is excessive.
Sure. Sounds like a dirty word.
I know, right?
It's like...
No. My first kid's name is going to be Nicolodi. That's the one. Yeah.
Nicolodi.
I remember my first Flavio.
You never forget it.
You never forget it.
Finish that one way too quick. Yep.
No. You never forget it.
Oh, Jesus.
Also got some box office stats for you.
Oh, mm-hmm. Thank God.
The release date was February 1st, 1977.
Yay, yay.
And it grossed $1.43 billion... Italian dollars?
Yeah, I was going to say Italian dollars, Italian buckaroos.
Anthony put the pound symbol there.
I copied and pasted, I think.
What is the currency of Italy?
It's buckaroos.
Lira? Isn't it lira?
It's
possible. We got to figure that out now.
In Italy.
Oh, it's meatballs.
What is lira?
It's meatballs.
Our Italian racism!
I forgot.
They use the euro.
Oh, okay. They use the euro. Cool. But meatball is just a secondary currency. It's a trade currency. Yeah.
God damn it.
I wish you to make it American, Adrian.
It made $1.8 million in North American rentals.
Oh, there we go. Very successful movie.
Okay. I need to convert this into meatballs real quick.
How many meatballs can you get for $1.4 million?
That's right. It's a meatball. In U.S. dollars. Okay. One, two, that's still billions of dollars in U.S. dollars, so.
Huh. Interesting. What? Billions? Yeah. What? Really?
Well, yeah. It's still euros, so it is, unless I can't count. One, two, three. Right. One, two, three. Yeah.
What? Wait, didn't use the euro in 1977, though.
That's what I'm saying, is I think Italy
the euro
has
a 90s currency, isn't it? Yeah.
That is beyond my purview. I just type things into the computer.
I'm like, Suspiria is not a $1 billion movie.
No, it is not.
Yeah.
It made as much money as The Dark Knight did in 2008.
In 1970.
If you know what currency Italy was using in 1977, please contact us.
Oh, okay, the lira.
Yeah.
Hey, that's what I thought, see?
You knew. You were right.
It was good.
Dude, I would kill it at a trivia night. I'm just saying.
Yeah. I would fuck us with the meatball joke for sure.
Oh,
It'd be worth it.
We lost, but you got a sick Italian racism joke.
Yeah, exactly. The people in the corner over there love that shit.
Oh, yeah.
Just like until the perfect question comes along. Aside from the euro, Italy used what currency? Meatballs.
Right?
Oh, okay, I was about to say it. I was going to make a joke, but the joke is already written into the outline, because Anthony knows me very well.
That's right, and you get to kick it off for us, Alex. So
excellent.
Let's do it.
So, we've talked about Giallo films very loosely in the past, but we've never actually gone into how formative this genre can be. We know that it inspired films we've covered, such as John Carpenter's Halloween and Alice, Sweet Alice, and that it is Italian in origin. No, Anthony will not make a Dino De Laurentiis joke.
I'm really hard to resist that one. Actually.
Have you been holding on to it? Have
that,
you been
the like, meatball was my placeholder.
It's killing him.
It's killing him.
It really
him.
Is.
He's like really like holding back.
Yeah, you have no idea, Adrian. It just keeps happening.
The term is actually the Italian word for yellow, called that because of the yellow of the cover for the crime novels that inspired it. Il Giallo Mondadori?
Hey, that was good.
Let us hear the music.
Mondadori! Which was first published in 1929. In fact, the very first giallo film was an adaptation of these very novels, released in 1933 and simply titled Giallo.
Okay. That's it. That's the history, guys. We're done.
That's it. Thanks, everyone, for listening. And... So the filming techniques from this adaptation were quickly picked up by other Italian filmmakers, and thus, a genre was born.
That's right. And if just to reiterate, these filming techniques were a lot more violent than people were used to at the time. They were like, oh shit, this is really like close up of like shit happening. They're like,
even if the blood is just laughably silly.
Oh yeah, yeah. Laughably like silent filmy, like,
like pink... paint mm-hmm. blood mm-hmm. like in this movie. But the genre's development would be put on pause for a few years, seeing as Italy found itself on the wrong side of World War II.
Whoops.
That yikes.
So we gotta take a break up of creativity. We have to control our population real quick. Just give us a couple of years. We'll figure this shit out.
Yeah, but then the people of Italy like kind of came back and like beat the shit out of Mussolini.
They did, because they were very inspired by giallo filmmaking. So it all comes around again.
They knew exactly what to do.
They're like, hey. Yeah, right?
Damn.
Soundtrack blaring, accordions in the bag. Just like,
goblin music.
So, Germany and Sweden tried their hand at making similarly styled movies in the following decades, but the first true Italian giallo film since Mussolini bucked things up was Mario Bava's The Girl Who Knew Too Much, a title which obviously drew inspiration from Alfred Hitchcock's The Man Who Knew Too Much.
Pretty clear inspiration, I would say. Yeah.
What do you mean?
Is that like plagiarism when you change like one little sentence?
When you change, like, no, and then you add, yeah, no. That's, if you would put that through a plagiarism detector, you would have failed. Still, this showed an early link between American and Italian thrillers, which would remain throughout the genre's history. Giallo films would expand in scope, at first simply being a term for violent Italian thrillers, but ultimately expanding into horror, and particularly slashers, the subgenre we have come to know and love deeply on the podcast.
And which I'm pretty sure was the near entirety of our May. This year.
Yeah, I think so. Elements of murder mystery and eroticism were thrown into the mix, and the genre was starting to define itself more and more, eventually being known to English audiences as spaghetti thrillers or spaghetti horror.
They just couldn't... Yeah, that wasn't my term. They just... So as bad as I am, in, like, the 60s, they're like, oh, yeah, it came from Italy? Oh, yeah, that's...
The spaghetti!
The spaghetti! It's a spaghetti drama! It's a regular drama!
When you think of horror, you just don't think of spaghetti. Like. Yeah.
The spookiest of the pastas. Oh. Where creepy pasta comes from,
yeah, right?
Spaghetti... That was the next Italian contribution.
Yeah, creepypastas.
That was the last vestige of just like...
The creepypastas. When 1970 rolled around, however, the genre would rise in popularity greatly thanks to an ambitious Italian filmmaker by the name of Dario Argento, who brought something a lot of filmmakers were struggling with worldwide, and that is style.
That's right. I mean, Hitchcock was, I would think, at this time, the most stylish filmmaker.
Yeah.
But Argento was like, hold my beer.
He's like, please, sit back and check this shit out.
Hold my pasta.
Hold my pasta.
hold my tortellini, bitch.
I hate you both.
It's so easy.
It really is.
Once he, but no, because now you've inspired him, and once he gets on a roll.
You shouldn't have given me feedback on that.
No, once he's on a roll, now every other thing is just going to be like, what Italian foodstuffs can I just like throw at the wall, it's much from, like pasta.
It's from growing up. I was Alright, see? This is a good thing. I got flipped off. Dario Argento was born the son of a Sicilian film producer slash executive, his papa, and a Brazilian photographer, his mama.
Nice.
He was clearly a brilliant kid, already writing for newspaper columns while he was in high school. He didn't actually bother with college, sticking to the newspaper gig and developing his skills as a screenwriter in particular. So, talented boy. Very talented boy. He excelled so much at screenwriting, he pursued it full-time and helped the legendary Sergio Leone create the story for one of my favorite fucking westerns of all time, Once Upon a Time in the West. Sanchez, have you seen this?
Oh, fuck yes.
Isn't that a great...
Dude, it's fantastic.
Such an amazing movie. You're not a fan of westerns, I know that. But...
Oh, I have a huge soft spot for fucking spaghetti westerns.
Yes, they're amazing, yeah. And this is the best one.
I don't think I've seen a western.
Okay, definitely start with the Good Men, the Ugly, all the Clint Eastwood ones back in the day. Spaghetti westerns are like the most stylish, badass fucking versions of that movie, I think.
Yeah, you could start with some modern ones too, like Tombstone. Yeah. Like
that's Tombstone? A really good one. Yes, that's right.
Fantastic.
We're just Western boys. And just play Red Dead Redemption. It's a great game.
Why would you make that suggestion to me when you know, like, you know...
Oh, it's not a hard game. It's a good game.
No. I'm not saying difficulty. Like, I mean, I'm willing to play a difficult game. In fact, you've had to talk me out of playing difficult
games.
That's
right.
But it's more I like open world. Like, I'm like, I'll try maybe.
Oh, you're gonna have a good time. You'll get lost though.
That's
like,
fine.
It's easy to just be like, I just want to like shoot the animals and collect the furs.
Why do you think that's my first thing?
Because you'll get good armor from it. That's how games work, Alex.
Crafting.
I just got to give her an addictive feedback loop. Yeah. That's it.
Whatever.
But of course, this gave him very, very big experience, actually, in the spaghetti western genre, which, of course, will lead to other spaghetti endeavors.
Do you think they call them spaghetti horror films for, like, stylistic comparisons to spaghetti westerns, or like they were being a racist?
They're being racist.
Okay.
Yeah, they're being racist.
I was trying to throw them a bone. I don't know.
I mean, possibly, but I think at this point in time, that's how we see it now, but back then it was like, it came from Italy, it's spaghetti shit. Like, that was the mentality back in the day.
Spaghetti cinema.
Spaghetti cinema, there we go. Much more eloquent. That's why we have them. So, even though this masterpiece of a Western was a major financial flop, unfortunately, it actually gave Argento the confidence to pursue his own career as a director. Up until this point, he was just a writer. Taking inspiration from the most stylish giallo film at the time, one that I fucking love, Blood and Black Lace.
Oh yeah, I wanted to watch that.
It's fucking amazing. I really like that movie. Ooh. Tarantino stole a lot from that one.
I've not seen it.
He stole a lot of shots from this movie.
In which movie?
From Blood and Black Lace.
Oh.
Yeah.
But which Tarantino movie?
All of them. Kill Bill mostly. Oh, no. Kill Bill, a lot of Kill Bill, actually, now that I think about it.
Man. I haven't done this in a while, but our good friend Caitlin, hi Caitlin, she hates Tarantino.
She hates Tarantino. Okay,
what? A laundry list of things that we don't have time to get into today, because this is not a Tarantino.
You know what, though? I can see why, though.
It's just not her cup of tea. Why. But the point is she, I made a joke or a reference to something from Kill Bill.
Uh-huh.
And then she got the reference, and I was like, wait, have you seen Kill Bill? And she was like, yeah. And I'm like, I thought you hated Tarantino. And she's like, but I love Lucy Liu.
Love overpowered.
I mean, yeah. Right.
I mean, yeah.
She's great in Kill Bill.
She's fucking awesome.
Lucy Liu's great in fucking
everything.
She kills Charlie's Angels, that shit.
I mean, to be fair, I also love Lucy Liu. So
she has one of the best Futurama episodes. The Lucy Liu bot? Did anybody see that episode? No?
I don't watch a lot of Futurama.
I know she's in Futurama, but I've not seen
one episode. If you're going to watch one episode... Actually, no, there's a slew of good ones, but that's a very good one. Totally watch it.
But, yeah, and that came up because the other funny part is she confuses, and this is such a bad confusion to make, she confuses Quentin Tarantino with Guillermo del Toro.
What?
Like, she just, like...
That hurt me.
She just mixes up their name. And, like, she's like, is this the person that I like? And I'm like, yes, this is the person that you like. And then sometimes then I'm like, no, this is Quentin Tarantino. You don't like this person. Like, it's just so funny.
That one's hurtful.
That one is... I can see the level of syllables in each right? name.
I was trying to think, like, process why.
I'm like, they sound a little similar.
Oh, yeah, but also I'm just like, just look at photos of two of them. Which one do you want to give a hug to?
No, you don't want to hug Tarantino.
No!
No.
I want, like, I just want to, like, nudge him away, but, like, not with my feet.
Hands, buddy, hands.
Hands.
Okay, so, yeah. Blood and Black Lace. A lot of Tarantino shots in that bitch. Trust me. But, of course, Argento actually crafted his debut feature, The Bird and the Crystal Plumage.
The bird with the crystal plumage. It's plumage.
Kingdom of the Crystal Plumage.
No, that hurt me.
That was a great. A lot of antagonism going on, which was actually even more stylish and shot the giallo genre just straight into the fucking stratosphere. This movie really popularized giallo films.
Nice.
So soon, giallo directors were doing their best to actually mimic Argento's style, the new boy. But he kept cranking out hits. Like, they couldn't keep up with his ass. So he paired The Bird with the Crystal Plumage with two more films with an animal in the title, actually. The Cat or Nine Tails from 1971 and Four Flies on Grey Velvet from 1972, which, of course, had the moniker of the Animal Trilogy. Yes. Now, his work was viewed by up-and-coming director John Carpenter, who used them as inspiration for, I don't know if you guys heard of this movie, it's called Halloween.
Never heard of it.
No, no.
Too obscure.
Yeah.
Too independent. I don't know.
Yeah, that's a weird indie film. So, Argento took a break, actually, from The Killing to make a couple TV dramas and a comedy. But he couldn't keep them down. He was drawn back to the genre by 1975, the same year as Jaws, showing all the imitators how this shit is done with Deep Red, widely considered to be the best giallo film ever made. However, Argento, he still wanted to top it, and he had an itch for a brand new trilogy. So, what was this trilogy, Mr. Sanchez?
It was the Suspiria de Profundis?
No, that wasn't the trilogy. That's the inspiration for the movie. It's coming up.
Well, Argento took a tour across
the... I know, he tried to... I did bold it.
I was like, you egged him on.
You set me up.
You set him up for
like,
failure.
What an idiot.
No.
You failed. You win nothing.
You lose, sir. Good day. he's our guest. And we're just...
Well.
But he's also our friend.
Argento took a tour across Europe. A Euro trip, if you will. And he was in awe of the architecture in cities like Lyon, Prague, and Turin. He also developed an obsession with the magic triangle, or the point in which Germany, France, and Switzerland meet.
It's like four corners, but way more interesting.
Yeah, yeah.
It sounds kind of creepy as fuck, I'm not going to lie.
Just like
the gothic architecture there, like, you know, you get that eerie feeling.
And then simultaneously being in three countries?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Creepy. And this is where occultist Rudolf Steiner resided with his community of followers. His other titles include Social Reformer, Architect, Esotericist, and Claimed Clairvoyant.
Sounds like a cult leader.
Yeah, he's a cult leader. But he also was like a respected intellectual, but I don't know, people just look past the cult.
I mean, it's quite a fucking resume.
Yeah, that's a pretty big resume.
This guy was on fucking LinkedIn. He'd be like, hit up by every cult.
We need you to represent our brand, please.
He's a social media manager.
I am off the clock. Stop talking to me about LinkedIn.
He's like, location, the magic triangle.
Again, magic triangle sounds dirty.
Oh, no.
That's a move, yeah.
I knew
with just high fives across the board.
Gotta get to the magic triangle. despite all this fantastical sounding stuff, Argento took all this very seriously. as the occult terrified him, and he used this to develop the script for his upcoming feature, Suspiria.
What?
Oof.
Talking about Suspiria?
Right. Yeah.
I actually didn't include a quote in here, but an interview asked him about this, and he was like, oh, so why do you do this? He's like, listen, I make a lot of, you know, unserious stuff, but I take the occult very seriously. I didn't type of, like, he was very, like, no, we don't fuck with this. Yeah.
He also drew inspiration from the 1845 collection of essays and poems from Thomas de Quincey, which were mostly about drugs and their effects on the mind. They are described as psychological fantasy, very renowned, and were based on Quincey's own visions while addicted to opium.
That's Jeez. Right. And that's actually where the title comes from.
Suspiria?
Suspiria de Profundis.
Profundis?
Profundis. Profundis. I'm not good with U's today. I got a U in my last name.
Well, this guy fucking...
Anthony Fuentes?
Fuentes. Oh, Jesus.
But yeah, De Quincey had some fucking visions while he was high on opium.
Yeah, he did.
And I guess Dario Argento sort of brought them to life.
He was like, opium, good idea. Okay.
Hey, the amount of, like, creative inspiration that has come from hallucinogens, I can...
Oh, yeah.
I mean, opium, not my first choice.
I can only imagine, yeah.
Not my first choice.
Yeah. Limited options back then, you know?
Opium's Plus, it's super addictive, right?
Mm-hmm. Opium, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So this guy was fucking high all the time.
And he made, like, this renowned work that lasted centuries.
Yeah. And he was just stoned out of his mind. Like.
Yeah.
And we're talking about it today. So.
Yeah, this and the cult leader. Way to go, Argento.
So it worked. So.
Yeah, I mean, he was on, like, early stage heroin.
That's right. Proto-heroin.
Proto-heroin.
This is how you make it to the history books, kids.
Do heroin. It's great. Nothing bad will ever happen.
Exactly.
That's the opening of that one. Jesus.
Anyway.
No.
I'm not doing it. I'm not doing it, but that would be hilarious.
To help flesh out the screenplay, Dario Argento hired Daria Nicolodi, and she drew inspiration from Alice in Wonderland and a story her grandmother told her about piano lessons she had taken as a child, which may or may not have involved black magic. Either way, the scenario was so scary, her grandmother fled during the middle of the semester. Argento later confirmed this was all bullshit.
Yeah.
I love a good bullshit story to kind of get the creative.
That's how you lie yourself in an interview to a top spot. And he was like, fuck, that was so creative. Fine, just keep the job.
Yeah.
Keep the job.
He was like, my grandmother was haunted by ghosts. Got the job.
He was haunted. Imagine, like, telling a story that, like, eloquent and you get a job out of it, though. Like,
that's pretty cool.
That's pretty good.
It's pretty tight.
Mm-hmm.
Gotta say. Yeah. But also, once again, Alice in Wonderland, a big opium story.
That's true.
Mm-hmm.
Again, you're proto-morphine, you're proto-codeine, and you're proto-heroin. Early stages.
Argento, he busted this myth, but in spite of being lied to, he liked Nicolodi's ideas, including incorporating a dream she had while she was staying in Los Angeles.
She was just feeding him creative shit. That's good.
Way to go,
lady.
I just wonder what should happen to her in L.A. that she had, like, a fucking nightmare of a lifetime.
Yeah.
Considering, when was this, the 70s?
Yeah.
Walking down Skid Row.
Los Angeles in the 70s? I can't imagine it was particularly great.
Even Hollywood Boulevard is grimy now, so...
Yeah, back then.
Yeah.
I can only imagine.
Oh, man. Yeah, Hollywood in the 70s. Yeah.
Exactly.
Oh, my gosh. Okay, so context. My sister, her name is Holly.
Mm-hmm.
She wants to go to Hollywood so bad.
Oh, God.
Oh, no.
Like, to the point that, like, my mom is just like, so, like, what are some places? I'm like, No.
This is not for children.
Don't take my eight-year-old sister to Hollywood. Like, she wants to go so bad. She wants to see, like, the stars, and she wants to see the Hollywood sign. And I'm just like, oh, God.
Okay, she can see the Hollywood sign. She can even go to New Beverly on a Sunday for, like, a kid's screening. Like, that's not bad. Like, they do Harry Potter and shit.
Yeah.
But just keep her away from the Walk of Fame.
She wants to see the Walk of Fame.
Does she want to see, like, an actual piece of shit? On, like, a star's name.
No, my sister is going to hate it. Like, she
might have to break this dream early, because that might provoke her to be like, I'm gonna be a star!
Well, I also don't want that, because, like, literally she's 8 years old. Like, I
feel like she could actually rep the souvenirs, though. Like, that would be kind of cool.
Yeah.
Oh, like, yeah. I would...
If I had that name, I would understand.
Mm-hmm. Totally. But also, like, she really wants to go.
But she meets that...
She thinks it's the coolest thing in the world that I live as close as I do to L.A.
Oh, my God.
She thinks it's the coolest thing, because she's like, she's like, do you live close to Hollywood? I'm like, yeah. She's like, how far away? I'm like 45 minutes.
Oh.
She's like, really? Do you go all the time? I'm like, to get drunk.
Right? Those dreams will die eventually.
Yeah. They're just going to die. They're going to die when she meets the Hollywood Spider-Man. It's like, oh, that is an open Spider-Man.
My mom would straight up murder. Like, my mother. You've met my mother.
Oh, I know.
My mom would tear Spider-Man limb from fucking limb. All eight of his limbs.
Like, don't look at her eyes. Don't look at her eyes.
My mother would, like, go feral.
Poor Spider-Man's got, like, fucking food stains on his
Yeah, dude, he's all selling cocaine and shit.
Got a toe poking out from the...
from the fucking costume.
Yeah. No,
it's like a hairy toe, too. It's like a little top.
Oh, thanks. I hate it. Anyway, that's my little... That was my little aside, because she was telling me about this last week, and I was just like, okay, I'm going back next week. I'm going to have to break this to her, or at least to my mother. I'd be like, take her to, like, the La Brea Tar Pits.
Yeah, there you go. Mid-city. This is Hollywood, baby.
Like, take her somewhere where, like, she can see the Hollywood sign, but she's not, like...
Yeah.
In it.
That's not a bad idea. Mid-city wouldn't be a bad idea.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, like, get her to the Chipotle over there. Look at the fucking like, Academy Museum. She's
yeah, the museum.
Great.
Like, just take her to some, like, weird, like, there's also the Science Museum that's right there. Like, just, like, go there.
Listen, we get a lot of listeners from other states and other countries. We're giving you good advice also.
Yeah, this is good. Like, good advice for 8-year-olds is also good advice for tourists.
Yes,
like,
yeah. When you're prepared, do the Hollywood Walk of Fame, but prepare for shit.
But be prepared for literal shit.
Yes. But great bars. Fantastic bars.
But yeah, but you have to Uber from bar to bar. Like, you can't just, like, you know, go to the Formosa.
Formosa's fantastic. That's good. In fact, Adrian, please help us out.
Sorry. Anyway. That was travel.
I love LA, but yeah.
That was travel. I mean, like, the Walk of Fame and, like, you know, Hollywood Boulevard is kind of a mess.
Yeah.
Despite Nickelodeon's nightmarish visit to LA, she was originally set to play the supporting role of Sarah.
I forgot because I didn't put a period there. I didn't write the rest of the sentence.
Oh, great.
It may have been high. She got injured. I don't know what the injury was, but it was enough where she couldn't perform, and they're like, fuck, we have to find a new person.
Oh, we have to hire someone? Jeez.
So.
This is like prime, like, you are one person doing the jobs of four people.
Yeah. So, Nickelodeon was probably attacked by somebody in Hollywood.
I know, right? On the Walk of Fame.
Unable to perform in the supporting role of Sarah, unfortunately.
Who would be, like, the Spider-Man of that time? Like, Betty Boop just fucking stomps her out and shit?
No, she got the magic triangle, and she couldn't perform.
Yeah. Oh. Oh, Jesus.
She got hurt in the process.
Anyway, actress Jessica Harper was cast in the lead role of Susie based on her performance in Brian De Palma's Phantom of the Paradise. And her character was based on Snow White. And she also turned down a role in Woody Allen's Annie Hall to be in Suspiria.
Oh, she missed that?
Hot take! I'm glad she was in this and not in Annie Hall.
I was about to say, yeah.
Yeah.
She kind of, like, dodged a bullet. Now she's in a fucking,
like a legendary movie.
Culturally significant movie.
So, I mean, have you seen Phantom of the Paradise?
No, I haven't.
I have not.
Okay, so there's a character in Phantom of the Paradise that directly inspires Griffin. Or Griffith in...
Berserk?
In Berserk.
Really?
Yes.
Now I have to watch that. Berserk is one of my favorite pieces
of media. Like, every time someone posts about this movie and shows this character, and it's Griffith when it's, like, when he's, like, full fucked up, like...
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Damn.
Oh, shit. I gotta watch this now.
Yeah. So every time that they, anytime I see on Twitter someone posting about it, everyone is immediately, like, Griffith? Griffith? Dude. Griffith? Is this Berserk? Is this a live-action Berserk movie? And I'm like, no! It's freaking Phantom of
Oh, I have to look this up now. Okay, so she was in that fucking Suspiria, and she avoided being groped by Woody Allen.
Excellent.
What a girl.
What? Yeah, excellent choices were made.
She was on a roll, seriously.
Yeah.
So, interestingly, Snow White would also be the main inspiration for the look of the film. which Argento wanted to be colorful with an emphasis on red.
And red they got. Ooh.
Yes. By the way, the second inspiration was, as we mentioned earlier, actually, Alice in Wonderland. That was also a primary inspiration for this movie.
You can see that, for sure.
Snow White was, like, the number one.
Yeah. I mean, I can see the combination of the two being good.
Yeah, it definitely has sort of, like, a fairy tale quality to it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Agreed. So, Suspiria was shot in Rome and Munich, mostly on sound stages, though, so Argento could have more movement options with the cameras, so he just kind of had more creative control.
Mm-hmm.
Dario Argento was very sad that Jessica Harper's voice was dubbed over, but dubbing was just kind of how they did things in 1970s Italy.
Mm-hmm.
However, there are still a few takes that include the original on-set recordings, despite popular belief, as each cast member spoke their dialogue in their original language.
Yes. The movie was shot, everybody had their lines in what their native tongue was, and it would be dubbed over later on.
Right. And yeah. Alex, this was your first time seeing the movie,
yeah.
So the dubbing, like, what was
it
your initial reaction?
Did
it? Right?
It confused me, because I was just like, okay, their mouths are moving like they're speaking.
Right, you see the lips moving, and, like, the sync is
it's almost there. It's not quite, though, yeah.
It's, like, almost there.
Yeah.
But there are some scenes where it's there, but they're very sprinkled.
Right.
Like, there's not a lot of them. Like, there's one scene when she's talking to the teacher in, like, the teacher's office.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, oh, that's one of the scenes. There's nothing skipping on the dub, nothing like that. But
right.
The tone is so same across the board. It's hard to really separate from it.
Yeah. So that was, it was difficult because I was like, well, their mouths are moving in English. Like, I'm reading their lips.
Yeah.
And they're speaking English. But
mm-hmm.
it had the same effect, like, as if I was watching someone, like, as if they were speaking in a different language, but it was dubbed over in English.
Yeah, at least it's consistent. I don't know.
As much as it could be.
Right.
Question mark. Yeah. Italian prog rock band Goblin did the score and completed it before the film was even shot, a practice adopted from Sergio Leone.
That's right. Same situation with Once Upon a Time in the West. Movie was built around that score, baby.
Seriously.
I think that's clever. I don't know. Mainly just because I think music can, like, make or break a film.
Oh, absolutely. You hear generic music, it really makes the film kind of...
And especially in this film, it, like, right from the beginning, the music hits and you sort of, like, are pulled in. Like,
yeah, and you kind of get the vibe of, like, what you're in for from the get-go.
It lulls mm-hmm. you in.
Yeah.
And has that sort of, like, fairy tale quality.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, dark. Ooh.
Yeah.
Ooh, so dark.
So good. So, Suspiria was released in Italy on February 2nd, 1997.
Oh, 1977. That
was
my bad.
I was like, whoa.
They took a long time to release it.
Classic I was like, 90s movie.
I know, right? Right after Can't Hardly Wait, it's double feature. She's all that.
Men in Black.
Men in Black.
Oh, like a 90s, like, grunge score.
Oh my gosh.
So
Smash Mouth. She fucking sees the girl, like, fucking fall from the thing. Somebody was.
It's like right as the noose, like, cinches around.
Oh, okay, but now I want to see, like, have you seen, like, when people will cut movies to, like, to make it look like a comedy?
Oh, yeah, different, like, trailer.
Yeah, I want to see Suspiria cut,
that
like,
would
a,
be amazing.
Cut, like, a so comedy.
Good.
That
right.
would be
Susie
funny.
Was just a regular girl.
And she was just looking to make it. Like,
in the big world of dance.
Oh, man. I need to look.
Rob Schneider shots in there.
Love it.
Oh, man, I am looking that up later. Anyway, so it was released on February 2nd, 1977.
Mm-hmm.
But 20th Century Fox was feeling spooky and brought this one to the good old U.S. of A. in July of 1977. It was pretty successful, being the 7th highest grossing movie in the company that year. Number one was a movie called Star Wars?
There's a little movie called Star Wars.
Might have heard of it. Kind of a big deal.
Anybody go see it?
Anybody? I did. In 1977, I was right there.
Double feature with Halloween, I'm sure.
Yeah, just a twinkle in my dad's eye, which he wasn't even born either. I know, he was born at that point.
Yeah, I feel like that was like a fork in the road, too. Like, you either saw Star Wars or you saw fucking Suspiria. Yeah.
There was two paths diverged in a wood.
And the small group in the middle of the Venn diagram knew what was up. Those guys knew what was up. They're like, holy shit, cinema.
Yeah, there's a small sliver, and those people saw both, and were just like, I'm the coolest fucking person ever.
You guys, these next 20 years are going to be insane.
American critics at the time were actually pretty mixed on it, but we only have a few of those reviews, because the overwhelming majority of critics in the years since fucking loved this movie.
Yeah, there was like a handful of reviews from the 70s that were like hit and miss.
Yeah.
But people kept reviewing this movie, and it's like, no, it's fucking brilliant. Shut the fuck up.
Shut up. One of the haters, Gene Siskel,
of course,
said the movie, quote, plays like a weak imitation of The Exorcist, unquote.
He's a weak imitation of Roger Ebert, son of a bitch. Oh. No, they're bros, but still.
I don't even get that comparison, though. No. Like, yeah. The movies are so different.
I don't get Exorcist vibes from this movie.
Not at all.
So...
yeah, Adam Smith of Empire Magazine was more praiseworthy, saying, quote, as an appetizer to the thoroughly bizarre world of Italian horror, Suspiria is the perfect antipasta.
Is that racist?
It's fucking racist! I am the authority on Italian racism, and I'm saying that it's racist. No.
Hey, that's an official review, Alex. That's a certified top critic.
It can still be racist.
I know.
I read the reviews for Don't Breathe.
It's like, just imagine if they said that about another movie.
Like, all I have to say is, Mamma Mia, this is a good movie.
Yeah, exactly. Like, they pretty much were just like, it's Italian! Suspiria ended up being Argento's most successful film in America and kicked off the Mothers trilogy. This guy likes his trilogies. Mm-hmm. He followed it up with Inferno in 1980. But 27 years to wrap up the whole trilogy with Mother of Tears in 2007. The only reason I knew that off the top of my head is I was watching a video about it when Adrian got here.
Oh, okay.
I didn't do the math that quickly. I just knew
up till the last minute.
That's how I do it.
So what's
your
way?
That should be our log line, honestly.
Studying up to the last minute. Yeah. As opposed to all of our guests who are like very, like they have
so on it.
And do research on their own and are just the best ever. And then are like, we're like the fucking idiots who like run the shit show.
Right. We put the mic in front of them. It's fine.
We are the conductors of this circus. Mm-hmm. Yeah. They're the ringleaders of this weird, weird circus we call a podcast.
Yeah. Thanks for carrying us, bros. Adrian, where'd you go?
Thanks. critics and sequels are fun and all, but what do the modern audiences think of Suspiria? We only have one source, just one, to get that kind of information. Take it away, Sanchez.
All right, let's find out what people said on Letterboxd.
Yay, yay.
Suspiria holds a solid 4.0 out of 5 out of 35,000 reviews. So I think they like it.
Yeah, I would say that.
A 4 out of 5, that's pretty...
That's hard to get on Letterboxd.
Pretty hard.
Yeah, I mean, I wish it was higher, but like you said, Letterboxd can be a bitch.
Well, yes. Out of 35,000 reviews, that's very impressive.
Yeah, so that's pretty solid. Lena gives the film 5 stars, saying the color red didn't exist until Dario Argento invented it in 1977.
Agreed.
Facts.
Which is such a great way to describe this movie. Like, the colors in it are just amazing and so stylistic.
Unique.
Oh, yeah, very unique.
There's no movie that looks like this.
You won't forget it, even if you see it once.
I'm reading ahead.
Wes also gives Suspiria 5 stars, saying, Dario Argento bashes me over the head with a neon light with Goblin screaming in my ear. Me? Wow, thank you so much.
I love it. Such a good review.
I love it.
That's kind of how I felt at the end, too. Right? I was like, wow.
You're like, oh, that fucked me up a little bit. Do it again. Do it again.
Thanks.
Thank you for the experience. Seriously. Like,
please, man.
Because I've seen it before, and even on this viewing, I was like immediately entranced. And
yeah.
Totally hooked. Andrea gives it 4 stars, claiming, Dario Argento wants to fuck the primary colors. And you know what? I think we should let him. We should let him.
I think we should. Oh my god. Yeah. That is so good.
That's such a, she couldn't hold it in. You couldn't hold it in.
No.
She was trying to hold back.
No,
know?
I agree though. Let him fuck the primary colors.
I mean, make love to them? I don't
know. No,
he's fucking
them.
He's fucking
them.
He's raw dogging
them.
He's raw dogging
them. Yeah, for sure.
Argento, you son of a bitch. Number one Gizmo fan is very glowing in their 5-star review, saying, "Watching Suspiria makes me forget that anything else exists. I forget every color that isn't on screen, every piece of music that isn't playing, and most importantly, every other film that has ever been made. It's a nightmare, a perfect, impossible, neon nightmare that makes me lose myself. And I love every goddamn second of it."
Did you write this?
I mean, I might have, it was like pulled straight from my heart. Yeah. That's how I feel about this movie.
Yeah, number one Gizmo fan gets it. Also, he loves Gremlins, obviously, so good taste, buddy.
And I love Neon Nightmare. Like, that should be like the name of a movie.
Is that right?
Somebody write that movie.
I think Frida did.
They have a series called Neon Nightmares. That's
and
right.
And this is part of it.
Damn.
And finally, number one Gizmo fan with a second 5-star review only a month earlier apart, saying, "Fuck me with pretty colors."
I love the eloquent, heartfelt review, and also like, "Hey, fuck me with pretty colors."
It's a good, like, it's how I feel about a lot of movies, where it's just like I have these like super eloquent thought, and then eloquent thoughts about like whatever, and then I'm just like total like liquid brain.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. I'm salivating now. So yes, let's go. Good movie. Good movie.
Good movie.
Because, yeah, there are moments where those colors aren't in the frame, but you want them to come back. Yeah. Like, you're waiting for the
I am waiting for that bath of
scene.
Red.
Yeah.
I'm like, no, we're done with the close-up. Cool. All right, architecture time. Let's go.
Yeah, and when it comes, you're like, oh, fuck yes, that looks awesome. So it's no wonder that Suspiria became a favorite with historians and film scholars, considered one of the best Euro-horror films of its time. It's been widely ranked in best of lists by publications like Empire Magazine and The Village Voice, not just for horror, but for cinema in general.
Yeah, I had to emphasize that because I looked at the list and they're like, oh, it's not just on horror lists, it tops horror lists. Like, it's actually on lists for, like,
it
just general movies.
I mean, it changed movie making in general, just, like, seeing that style on screen is, you know.
It's insane. Yeah.
So Argento was a critical darling well into the 80s, but unfortunately, that status wouldn't last as fans began to turn on the legendary director. Fangoria writer Maitland McDonagh summed it up in 2010. "Over the last decade, standards have slipped. For a filmmaker who was always so precise in his construction and cutting, his later films such as Phantom of the Opera and The Card Player are sloppy, stitched together, so carelessly made that they leaked vital fluid."
Jesus, okay.
"Gradually, the kaleidoscope style that once characterized his films has slowly blanched away."
Yes.
That is fucking brutal, though.
Yeah, that's a pretty big takedown right there.
Because you're talking about one of the greats.
Yeah.
That's true. I mean, he can't be hot forever.
That's true. Yeah. But he had a good run.
He had a really good, decades-long run.
Yeah.
3 decades.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I've heard him compared to John Carpenter, who had a really good run.
Yeah.
But Argento was just fucking prolific. Like,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
They both bowed out. Oh, no. Carpenter, I feel like, bowed out before it got too bad for him. And then Argento kept going, unfortunately.
He just loves movie making too much, I guess.
It's in his soul. That's true.
In 2008, Pineapple Express director David Gordon Green announced he was set to remake Suspiria with Natalie Portman as the lead. This announcement was met with so much backlash that the movie itself was stuck in development hell, eventually losing Portman and being considered too expensive for horror in the found footage era.
Yeah, he had big ideas, but they were like, "Buddy, we just screen record, you're fine. We have a camcorder. This is how it works now."
That's right. And horror is notoriously known as sort of like a low budget production. Mm-hmm. Like, that's how you make money off of it, right?
Exactly.
It's like anyone can sort of make it.
Especially in 2008.
Yeah.
Right after a good old film known as Paranormal Activity.
Exactly.
Where they're just like, how can we get, like, what was the, like, it was like a 400% or like four, like
it was. I think it was like $15,000 that it made like 140 something million dollars.
Yeah, yeah. It made an insane amount of money.
So, that's a big return.
Let's make a fucking horror movie, guys. Yeah, let's do it.
In the cauldron.
Money.
All just in the cauldron.
You're gonna write it tonight.
Yeah.
I have ideas.
Let's do it.
So Green would get his chance to take a crack at horror with the Halloween franchise around a decade later, and a remake of Suspiria would finally make its way to theaters. There is a lot to unpack in that remake, and a pretty tumultuous development at that. So we're going to save it for its own episode. So for now, let's talk about how the color red was invented in 1977, shall we?
Yeah.
Hell yeah.
All right, so aside from the color red, what are your guys' thoughts on Suspiria? And, you know what? Adrian, what do you think? What do you think of this particular film?
I think he hated it.
Yeah, I fucking hate it.
I think it's no secret that I freaking love this movie. It's sort of one of those movies that you see once and it sticks with you.
Yeah, definitely.
It's just like a visual experience. It's still gory. Like, there's crazy kills in it. And I guess what I really love about it is just, like, it captures that feeling of a nightmare.
Yeah,
like
that's
when
a good
you
way
have a
it.
Nightmare, okay. Like these sort of things happen. You know,
like she's always on her back foot. There's no recourse.
Yeah, and there's things that are sort of like unexplained, but you feel that like sort of terror.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and as you know, I'm also like a David Lynch fan.
Yeah,
and I feel like that is part of it too.
What?
you know, he does a lot of work with like nightmares and bringing them to life and
like dreams.
Yeah, dreams in general.
Yeah,
and I actually feel like he probably got a lot of inspiration from this movie actually, because I see some connections there.
Right, it kind of like sort of camera movements and just the atmosphere.
Yeah, the atmosphere and just like some of the colors and. You know, if you've seen Mulholland Drive, like, the blue in that movie, mm-hmm. like, I kind of see it in Suspiria as well. So.
Honestly, the dialogue choices, too, you know, the way they present their dialogue comparatively. Yeah.
And actually, this is a really obscure, like, note, but there's a scene where Susie is talking to a psychiatrist or psychologist,
mm-hmm.
and he's wearing a light green jacket.
Mm-hmm.
In Twin Peaks, Dale Cooper wears a similar light green blazer.
Okay.
So I'm wondering if that's like a
callback?
A little callback, but
maybe.
Because
Twin Peaks can get pretty colorful sometimes,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, and it's a really specific color, like blazer. Like, nobody in their right mind would wear that shit. So.
Again, we talked about Hollywood Boulevard earlier. I don't know about that.
There's probably somebody on Hollywood Boulevard wearing
but they're dressed up as Dale Cooper. That's the catch.
Well, they got the AirPods with the Suspiria soundtrack at the same time. Yeah. It's a double whammy right there.
Oh,
right?
Yeah.
So any of you that saw Twin Peaks Season 3, you know.
If you know, you know.
Yeah.
Alex, what'd you think? What did you think?
Ooh, okay.
It was your first time watching, right?
Yes. Mm. Yes, it was.
Mm-hmm.
That's quite the experience.
I liked it.
Mm-hmm.
It was parts of it were difficult for me to follow, but I liked it.
Oh, yeah.
Like, in parts, of, like, I feel like, when you were saying, like, you had to, like, you were watching it while you were, like, playing video games.
Yeah.
It's so impossible to, like, try to, like, this is one of the few movies, like, I know, obviously, we're not going to do, like, a play-by-play for this, but, usually before we do play-by-plays, like, we'll be like, oh, you don't want to miss any part of this movie. But, like, Suspiria is, like, one of those movies where I was just like, if I missed, like, more than 5 seconds, I thought missed something. Mm-hmm. And I probably did.
Mm-hmm.
So I was trying to, like, do stuff while I was watching it, which I do often for the podcast.
Mm-hmm.
Adrian just rolled his eyes at me. He just rolled his fucking eyes at me.
This is pure cinema. It requires 100%.
Oh my god. The
no,
animosity.
I'm just kidding. No, I totally get it, though, because even on a repeat viewing, I feel like I understood it even more.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's my third time watching it.
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly. That's why I was like, Ninja Turtles, I could do it. Then
the
I was
story,
like, no,
the story
no.
made more sense.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
I feel like it definitely would benefit like rewatching it.
Mm-hmm.
But I did really enjoy it. It was, now that you explain it like a dream or a nightmare, that surreal feeling I think is very apt, is a very good way of describing it. I think I was watching a Ryan Hollinger video before you guys got here.
Mm-hmm.
It is very much an acquired taste. This is very much not for everyone. I will say that.
Probably, yeah, that right. makes sense.
Yeah, I feel like all the marks of, like, giallo filmmaking are there. And sure. it's so, like, if it's your first time, you're like, what is going on?
Because you're looking at apex giallo filmmaking. Yeah. So you're like, oh, wait, the meta's been established. Well, I don't know any of this.
Like, my first giallo film. This is my first, like, yeah, first time watching Suspiria. So, like, all of it, I was like, style-wise... The dubbing thing, like, it was, there was just a lot to take in.
It's all, so it's, out there.
All the women vaguely look similar, so, like,
a little bit, right?
Oh, they do.
Like, there was a point where I got characters confused, and I was like, oh my god, this person.
It's hard to keep
like,
them straight.
It was very, like, I was like, okay, this is.
It really is.
That's confusing.
Especially right at the beginning, too, as that's the girl is, happened. Like, running from the academy.
The
you're like, wait.
The girl that was running from the academy, when she was at her friend's house, and, like, she was getting, like, murked.
Yeah.
The whole time I was thinking it was the main character. I was like, we're 5 minutes
in. She's already dead.
I know, we're 5 minutes into this movie. What is going on?
Change your haircuts at least. Come on.
It was the 70s. Oh, okay. No one was doing that. Oh. But yeah. So that threw me off, like, to the point that I had to pause, rewind, and be like, wait. Okay, no. Okay, I didn't miss anything. Because I thought that, like, it had skipped ahead or, like, something had happened. But no.
Yeah.
But yeah, I liked it.
That was a good movie. I agree.
Yeah.
In fact, I actually say it's one of the great movies. I really, really like this movie. And the thing is, like, I thought it was pretty good the first time I watched it. But I've seen it 3 times, and it gets better every fucking time.
Okay.
Like, it literally just...
It really does.
It does, right? Like, really you find more to mine from every frame. I felt bad playing Ninja Turtles because I was having such a good time. But then I was like, okay, no, you can play it this anytime. You have to watch the podcast, go back half an hour, just play it again. And I was like, oh, I'm engrossed in this. This is fantastic. This movie, I think, having done the research for it now and knowing the fairy tale, Snow White, Alice in Wonderland inspirations, and the fact that actually, I didn't leave this detail in there, but it was shot in Technicolor as well, which is mainly for animated films back in the day. Like, you can see that inspiration 100% in every frame. And I don't know, there's something about everything feels important in this movie, which is why, Alex, like, you made a very good point. You can't skip 5 seconds. You can't skip 5 seconds. Even 5 seconds of somebody leaning against a wall while, like, the soundtrack blares. You're like, no, I need to absorb this. I need to absorb this right now.
If you have to look away for whatever reason, the soundtrack is a great cue of when to, like, pay fucking
some
attention.
Shit's about to happen.
Like,
yeah.
Pay
when
attention.
That music hits.
Although, once the music hits, it's usually, like, after something's happened, and it's just like, ah! Oh,
yeah, it's, like, lingering.
Are you surprised? Mm-hmm. Like, and then you have to be like, ah, oh, shit, I missed something. I need to rewind.
Right?
But I love how the main character is always just back against the wall. Like, there's nothing's working for her.
Mm-hmm.
And you want, like, the littlest piece of grace for her every time, and it just doesn't really happen.
No.
And it kind of gets crazier.
This is rock bottom, the movie.
It really is. Right down to, like, oh, okay, cool, she wasn't letting the door. And then it turns out to be like, yeah, no, she killed, like, this centuries-old witch figure and is now, like, in the shit. Like,
yeah.
It gets to that level, and it's entirely understandable how it gets from point A to point B.
Well, you bring up a good point where it's just like she is just repeatedly just getting shit on.
Yeah, every
but
every
at
time.
The end, she's walking away and she kind of like laughs.
Yeah, she's like, fuck it, I've already made it past all this. This is burning down behind me. Let's just fucking go.
Let's just go.
Well, because also part of the story is I feel like the witches are all like sort of conspiring to like, you know, bait her in.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think there's a connection where she says her aunt knows Madame Blanc, and that's how she sort of got to the school. And then at the beginning, she's not staying at the academy. She's staying
and
at
And then they manipulate the situation to get her there.
And they get her to stay at the academy, and they're trying to control her so hard.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And they do a lot to kind of manipulate her into, like, almost like breaking her mentally.
Exactly. Yes. Oh, yes.
Like,
I was gonna say, there's that dance scene right at the beginning where,
with the
where
light.
She's sort of like forced to dance, but she's in sort of like a weakened state, and I think they're trying to break her in that moment.
Well, there's that, and then also like after she has that like episode where she like collapses.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, she's drugged
with the wine. Yeah.
Every
night.
Oh
yeah, they're drugging her.
Where they're like they are drugging her so she can't like be inquisitive or like investigate what's going on.
Yeah.
And her like the roommate that she shares a door with, like, or whatever, like,
yeah.
Like, she's, and then that whole shit show happens, and, like, it's a whole thing.
So. Right, yeah, she shares that curiosity, and she gets fucking...
Yeah. She's like, I have a take on this, do you think it's the same fucking... Okay, it is, holy shit, let's go.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Scooby-Doo, let's fucking do it.
Yeah, and and she comes up with the smart idea to, like, when she's just like, they're not leaving, because yeah. they'd be turning right.
I'm like, damn, her left. Sense of direction is fucking, like...
Phenomenal!
And I also feel like her being an American... like, really, really makes her kind of, like, again, like, people are kind of, like, uneasy about why she's even there.
Yeah.
And it kind of puts everybody else against her also a little bit, so.
Yeah, immediately when she comes to the school, like, the girls are a little hostile or, like, yeah. but sort of in a playful, like, weird playful way.
Like, it's very transactional.
It's playful in the way that, like, I would imagine a dance academy would be playful.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of divas. A lot of divas. Yeah,
but I love the line that one girl gives her, like, oh, names that begin with the letter S.
Snakes.
Are the names of snakes.
See, but even something like, that wouldn't be in, like, a lot of other movies. Like, just the way that line was delivered,
yeah.
the scenario in which that line presents itself, like, that's how distinctive
this
movie is.
Like, that scene in particular is so weird, because the main character is, like, in the back, and she's just like, what the fuck is going on? And
yeah.
these two girls are just like, psst.
Yeah, they're, like, sticking tongues at her.
And like, it's just like,
but
and
you know
she,
what?
She's like, there's some European shit going on right here. What's going on?
I did read a little interesting tidbit that said that originally, the characters were supposed to be played by kids, by
yes,
children.
Yes, they were. They were supposed to be played by kids.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And they changed that because they realized, like, nobody's going to fucking fund this movie.
It's
never going to get made. It's way too graphic.
Stab
I think
a kid in the
but
heart.
It makes it kind of unsettling.
Yeah, but they kept the dialogue.
Exactly.
They kept
exactly.
the dialogue as if they were, like, children.
And that makes it kind of, like, weird.
It
and
does. It really
yeah.
does.
Oh, but it makes it so, like, I don't know, its own. It really is, like,
yeah.
its own thing.
Oh.
Agreed.
With yeah. the colors and all that stuff, too, like, this is just an audio-visual experience that, again, you just can't look away. Make sure you can't look away. And to me, it's a great film.
Yeah, just put your phone down for, like, it's like an hour and 38 minutes.
It's pretty short,
it's
too,
short.
Actually.
It's very short. Short. Yeah.
It's very, like, concise, to the point. Just watch the movie.
Mm-hmm. And watch it. Like,
yeah.
actually sit down, turn the lights off, just fucking absorb
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
Let the colors fuck you. That's how it's gonna work.
Just let it happen.
Just let the primary colors fuck you. You're good. But...
give it up to the colors.
Give it up to the colors, dude. Just,
just set some mood lighting. It's gonna be great.
You're just gonna lay there.
All you gotta do is lay there.
Yeah. Speaking of, you know... all that... Wow. Transition here.
Oh,
you guys
no.
are a nightmare.
Oh, this is great. But this movie has very distinct cinematography and is obviously a pretty important film just in the grand scheme of film. Where have you seen its influences in other movies? And if not, what lessons could American directors in particular take from the visuals of Suspiria?
I think you should answer this one first. Or
Sanchez, what do you think?
I mean, as far as, like, what other directors should take from this,
mm-hmm.
what I really appreciated in this movie is some of the little, like, quick cutaway detail shots.
Yeah.
So, for example, like, right at the beginning, she's walking out of the airport,
mm-hmm.
and there's a really quick, like, close-up shot of
the
door, like, mechanism.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But the way it's cut is very, like, jarring, and, like, also the way it moves, like,
yeah.
the piston or whatever, like... it's just like, you're like, oh, like...
it's scary.
Stabbing
it's
motion, like...
yeah.
Stop!
Like, you know,
yeah.
deep down, you, like, recognize that, and you're, like,
mm-hmm.
already unsettled by this world.
Yeah.
And I think there's a lot of little shots like that throughout the movie that I really like, so...
the marbles at the end, too.
Yeah.
It kind of rolls up to the reveal
yeah.
that you know is about to happen, but they're like, no, let's linger a little bit. It's at the bed.
That's
foot.
Exactly it. Yeah, there's
yeah.
a lot of lingering shots, like, when the headmistress is sleeping in the auditorium with the students,
mm-hmm.
and she's behind the curtain, and it just sort of like...
yes.
You get like a wide static shot of her silhouette.
And while stuff's happening, but it's
like... and you just hear her breathing,
yeah.
like... That's a great, great moment in the movie, and, you know, I think, you know, more movies could maybe benefit from like, little details like that
yeah.
that sort of build the world.
Maybe not being cut like a music video in, like, a movie, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
For me, in terms of inspirations that I see, well, obviously slashers try to emulate some stuff they see from Suspiria. I think the graphic violence, you can clearly see inspiration, other just mainstream stuff. One that I realized, I think took a lot from this movie, Jamie Lee Curtis's Prom Night from 1980 is a colorful ass slasher movie.
Okay.
That has a lot of graphic violence, a lot of this stuff like that. We've covered it. I want to go back and rewatch it because I was getting some return, because I had seen Suspiria first and had not seen it for a while. Saw that movie and, you know, we loved it.
Mm-hmm.
And then I saw this two more times, but this third time I was like, holy shit, hold on a second. Like, I can kind of see, like, where that comes in because it's such a red movie and there's a lot of, like, stuff like this going on, but it's cheap. It's very cheap compared to Suspiria. So it's interesting to see, like, that kind of emulation. But I'm with you, Adrian. I think paying attention to the details is really, really a big thing. And also, like, I think letting your score really distinguish itself. A lot of scores, I think, now sound too similar, or they sound a little too epic, or they're trying to fit that commercial vibe. Fuck commerciality. Do this.
Yeah.
Do this. Give it a voice.
Finish the score before the movie.
Exactly.
And it just worked, like, so perfectly.
And you know that helps how a movie is shot.
But every time that I've heard that happen, like, it always, like, I haven't heard stories of that, like, hurting the movie.
No. Akira was another one that did that, too.
Yes.
Akira was another one that did that.
Yeah, I think they did it maybe with a Star Wars film?
Maybe. Oh, with John Williams in the first one, I think.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Because he used placeholder scores in there, but it wasn't the first one. Because
okay.
They used a.
I might be completely talking out of my ass right now, but I think I think it might have been a Star Wars film. But anyway, I was going to say, I just fact checked myself, so I'm going to retract what I was going to say. But I was going to say Carrie, but Carrie came out before this.
Yeah, 76.
Carrie came out in 76. But Brian De Palma already had. We already know, like, has pulled inspiration from giallo in general.
Yeah, and actually, Argento also recognized Jessica Harper from a De Palma film.
Right.
Yes.
So I think, like, there's probably, like, creative collaboration there already.
Definitely. Yes.
So I think in Carrie, there's a lot of inspiration from Italian giallo after seeing Suspiria.
Yes, definitely. And like, Carrie's just, like, a colorful
film. It's colorful and just, like, the dramatic, like, shots and just, like, the sudden... And it's not necessarily, like, the dramatic cutaways like we see in Suspiria, but just, like, the panning, in Carrie that, like, I really liked.
Or when the mom is, like, ready to die and that score
and
comes
she's
up,
like,
right there,
she's
holding
so
her arm up.
Good.
My God, Carrie's a great movie.
Carrie is such... We still get corrections. We fucked up in that episode.
We do. We
Oh no.
Will we say Lori Piper is Piper Lori?
Yeah.
I feel so bad about that. We mentioned her a lot.
We still get corrections every now and again where they're just like, ah, sorry guys, just wanted to, I'm like, I'm sorry.
My bad. You mentioned the color though, and like that's one of the things too that like modern horror movies are very like muted for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lack of color. Mostly.
Even the remake.
Yeah.
Even the remake.
Oh, yeah. I saw, like, very brief clips from the remake. I'm like, this doesn't look similar.
No, they're very different.
They're so different.
They're very different.
So
and
different.
Do you think that, I mean, this is just me spitballing, but do you think that's where a lot of, like, criticism came from? Just, like, stylistically they look different and, like, that it, like, kind of, like, conflicted with people's preconceived notions of Suspiria?
I personally think so a little bit, actually.
Yeah, I think so. That's definitely, you know...
It's so iconic. Mm. How can they not make that comparison?
Right.
Sure.
But I think that's what led them to, you know, there's no way we can replicate this style. Like,
yeah. And it came out in 2019. 2018.
Right?
2018?
Okay. So, like, a time where, like, pretty much a lot of horror films were like, how dull can we make this movie? Like, color-wise.
Well, it's interesting
That's a fair criticism, too.
Well, I'm not necessarily meaning in, like, a bad way, but, like, color-wise, like, we're not, like, you know.
Yeah.
Nobody's getting flashy.
Yeah.
It's not that common.
I mean, in American film, because around 2018 is when Climax came out.
What was Climax?
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, it's a Gaspar Noir movie.
No way. Yeah.
I haven't seen it.
Oh, it's a dance movie. It's just a similar, like...
Yeah.
Wait, I remember the previews for it.
Yeah.
And that's sort of in this Suspiria...
It's a Suspiria-esque type, French Extremity. Like, Gaspar Noé is also a new French Extremity director.
God, that makes sense.
But I think you're right. The new Suspiria is sort of like the opposite, maybe intentionally, because also the score is done by Tom York from Radiohead.
Oh, okay.
And it's very, like, sort of subdued and, like, melancholy and, like, slow.
I would say the whole movie.
I do love some Tommy York. So.
It's fucking awesome, though. I love it. It's great. It works well with that type of movie.
I gotta rewatch it.
But it's so different from the Goblin
well,
score.
Which is
awesome, too.
We're gonna have to cover it.
I do find it interesting that, like, Gordon Green fucking... he wanted to make Suspiria so bad, and then he released his Halloween remake, or not remake, sequel, the same year as Suspiria.
No.
The remake. And he beat the shit out of it. He beat the shit out of it.
Okay, well,
like, box office wise.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah, he was like, fuck it, I won. I won in the end.
Did he, though?
yeah, it's true. That's a good point.
And I like that also, 2 years later, Natalie Portman would be in Black Swan, a dancing horror thriller.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking, yeah.
Yeah, which was based off of another favorite of the Horrible People's podcast.
Perfect Blue,
yes. Which we saw together, right?
Oh, yes.
That was fantastic. That's a good
movie. You tell that story on the episode.
Before I met you.
No, Perfect Blue?
Yeah.
No. You tell the story on the podcast about how, like, you took Adrian and Ruben to go see it.
Oh, my God, yeah.
And, like, and during the very... graphic.
You just do not expect it.
And, like, I guess they both, like, leaned over.
No, Adrian was fine. He was looking straight at the camera. It was Ruben.
Ruben was like, what, though?
I watched a lot of fucked up movies.
Yeah,
so.
Adrian was staring right at it. He was good. But I looked over at Ruben. Me and Ruben looked at each other at the same time. And I was like, I'm so sorry. Yeah. And Ruben was like, what the fuck is this?
It's true. So we did go see Eraserhead.
That's true.
Together.
Yeah.
And you were fine.
It was like a midnight screening. Yeah. And I was just like, hooked
you're just
to
eating
the screen.
Popcorn.
Like,
just fucking...
You're like, what?
I'm loving this.
This is awesome. Yeah.
And I think that's part of it, too, is like Suspiria has those qualities where you're like, holy shit. Like mm-hmm. that first kill in the movie.
Oh, the heart?
Yeah. Oh,
she's
okay.
Literally stabbed
she's
in
the heart.
Her pulsating heart.
Like,
and it's not like really like vicious stabbing.
No,
it's just
it's
like
a
poke.
Slow little like.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, let me just poke your heart right here.
Penetrate the flesh a little bit.
Oh.
Just a little poke.
Brutal and like. Seriously, it's one of the most intricate kills I've ever seen because she gets killed and hung and she crashes through the ceiling.
Have you seen the Red Letter Media? Video on this?
Yes.
Yeah.
I love Red Letter Media.
They talk about how the first 15 minutes of the movie, you're like, holy shit, it just starts so up here. And the movie stays at that pace, but it doesn't go above it, only because the first 15 minutes were so
It really
insane.
Does, like, peak right at the beginning. But it's still, you know, I still love it.
It doesn't drop, though.
No,
it just stays at that pace for me.
Yeah.
The one point I will say is the exposition dump with the psychiatrist.
It's dumb.
It is like a constipation dump. Like,
it's very, like... Like that was the one moment where, like, I checked out. Like, I was
okay, cool. Let's get some climax now, huh? Let's go.
Old guy
Let's go.
About?
Yeah. I know. It's just like, okay, I get it. Women are bitches. Women are witches.
Yeah, he says some crazy shit, and then he's literally like, oh, belief in the supernatural is mental illness.
Like, witch, please. Witch, please.
Witch, please.
It's so funny.
All right. We talked actually through most of our questions that we had because we just brought it up throughout the episode. But let's get to the fun shit. So the three of us are off to a school for podcasters and our classmates slowly start getting offed. What organization is ultimately responsible for the rampant death and what do they want from us?
Alex?
Mm-hmm.
What do you think?
I think... Damn, I'm trying to...
Who's out to get us?
I'm going to say the Nerdist podcast.
Oh, the Nerdist podcast is out.
is killing people because they want total monopoly over everything.
Oh, okay.
I have a bone to pick with Chris Hardwick.
What is your bone to pick with Chris Hardwick?
Well, I'm not getting into it now.
Okay, all right.
Wait, I kind of loved him, though, because he was on G4.
G4, yeah. We're both G4 boys.
Listen, I loved him for a very long time.
No.
But... it's another story for not a podcast.
Gotcha.
Anyway.
Yeah. Gotcha.
Oh, boy.
All right, Adrian, who's out to get us and where they
Anthony,
want?
Anthony, actually, what do you think? Because I...
Oh, NPR. NPR wants us because they're like, listen, you can't reasonably talk about such a cinematic masterpiece and dive into something like Suspiria. And I'm like, listen... we talk shit on the NPR voice so much. We need to put dick jokes in it.
No.
Like, that's just how we gotta do it.
Oh, my
God. And they want a dick joke-less podcast scene. So NPR wants our ass.
My dad was listening to like one of our morning episodes that we did where we're like drinking coffee and we are doing our NPR voices.
I know.
And he was just like, you guys do have NPR voices in this episode. I'm like, fuck.
I know. We try not to.
But I also, like, my office knows that I do a podcast. They don't listen to it, as far as I'm aware. But, and they were like, oh, we're doing videos. Do you want to do the voiceovers for it since you have a podcast? I'm like, oh, no, I'm going to have to, like, prep the NPR voice.
Yeah, like, it's a different kind of, like, tone that you're going into.
Where it's just like, hello, everyone. Like, it's just...
You know what? I do, like, cringe a little bit. I love listening to NPR, but...
Yeah. Where it's just like making their voice like
they do
silky.
Have a certain like air,
like it's just it's there's
a vibe. Anytime one of them says Latinx, I'm like, no, fuck you, go away. I don't want this shit right now.
I love This American Life, but
but please, sometimes
just... cool it a little bit on the voices. make it a little bit easier.
We're not babies, sir. We're not babies.
Hello and welcome.
This is fresh air.
Yeah. Or like, hey, what's up, fuckers?
Welcome to another episode. We're here to drink and talk shit.
Thanks for carrying us, Sanchez.
I think after that horrible impression of Terry Gross, I think NPR is out to get me.
We've made enemies in this last part.
I agree with Anthony. I think that NPR is out to get us. And we'll eventually be killed one by one.
They are a government institution, that's right.
Oh no, they're connected to the man.
Mm-hmm.
But they will have a tote bag with like each of our severed heads.
Listen, as long as I can see like a Tiny Desk concert first, I'll be satisfied.
That would be awesome.
As long as I can see a Tiny
Desk. You'll see it from the very transparent cheap tote bags. And your eyeballs just rolling through.
That's
there.
Cool.
That's good.
That's cool.
Again, this would not fly on the network.
Can you imagine? They invite us to the NPR studios and there's fucking like...
No.
You know... Wire traps, like in Suspiria.
Yeah, it's a saw trap.
Right. We finally get to the thing, and we're just like, "Listen, I'm gonna try not to talk." We've talked about buttholes like in four episodes.
Okay, someone that something that I will be announcing soon. So I don't know him super well. It was like listening to the podcast and he was like, oh, I really liked it. He was listening to our Starship Troopers episode.
Oh, cool. Oh.
And he was talking about how like, cause for those of you who haven't listened to the episode, go listen to it. It's really funny. But also, a guy joins the military for a girl and was like, why would you do that? And I, in the back, I'm just like, pussy! And he's just like, you say pussy a lot. And I was just like, oh yeah, you don't know. That's just the kind of person I...
You're like, hey, listen, I fucking love pussy.
I'm like, oh, yeah, you don't know.
This is the Pussy Positive Podcast.
And he's like, you guys say tits a lot, too. And I was just like, yeah, I have no argument. That's just kind of... Welcome to the podcast!
Listen, we do alliteration Pussy Positive Podcast, but we also love tits. Just, at the end of the day.
I mean, it's horror. Like, you can't...
No,
like,
it's very hard.
You can't get around it.
Yeah.
That's what it's known
he said that and I was just like, oh yeah, you haven't like listened to me talk
for
more
than
no, it's just like we've only played Dungeons and Dragons together. You don't know that this is just kind of the person I am.
I'm all there, baby. It's all just hundreds of hours of content right there.
No, it's just like, it's more also just like, you don't know that I'm kind of a bro. Sorry. It happens.
They will learn.
Teach them. Anyway, sorry. That was my side note.
Oh, it's great. No. So, but conversely.
Oh, no.
You're allowed to open a school ran by a very specific group of ghouls in the horror genre. You know, vampires, zombies, all that shit. Who gets the grants, and how does this bitch actually turn out? So, Alex?
Vampires? It's just a fuck fest.
The school of... If we teach everybody how to do, like, a very, very good orgy...
No. It's like, no, this is, like, the hidden, like, this is, like, Eyes Wide Shut, but, like, it's like a proper academy,
there you go.
It's, like, Vampire the Masquerade, like, on the back burner,
it's, like, the 1% of vampires.
Yeah.
And, like, it's a sex club also.
Yes! Sex club vampires! vampire.
When you graduate, you don't do the caps. You throw the masks. You throw the fucking phantom mask.
Yeah.
Oh, you're like, oh, that's what your face looks like. Holy shit. I only know your dick. I only know your dick.
I only know the intimate details of your body.
Yeah. Oh, no.
That's good. I like that. That was nice. Adrian, what do you think?
You know what? Just because of that, I agree, vampires.
Okay.
But I would invite fucking Blade as a speaker. And then he just fucking cuts down like all the fucking vampires.
Oh no!
I love that.
Oh no!
It would just be like a bloodbath.
I can't tell. Oh my god!
Blood rave.
Yeah, that's exactly. So I love that scene. By the way. That's what I imagined in my head.
That means we got to get Adrian and Phil for Blade 2.
Yeah, we do.
Oh my god!
Both of you guys are on that one.
Yeah, we do.
Oh my god. Okay, no, I want a school. Fuck, I didn't even think about this one, but I just thought, okay, I want a school full of, like, it's going to be a ghost school for sure, but it's going to be like the Harry Potter, like, you know, newly held snake.
Sure.
And it's going to be the most vile motherfuckers of all time.
Oh.
So I'm like, oh, you want to learn about the Russian Revolution? Here is Joseph Stalin. He's going to talk about...
It's horrible.
Yeah.
This shit's most fucked up.
I want everyone. I want all of them on this bitch.
Okay.
Yeah. Fucking science is gonna be taught by whoever made the atom bomb. Like it's gonna be a wonderful like.
Oppenheimer.
Is that Oppenheimer?
Oppenheimer. I knew his name. I just didn't come up right now.
I know that because of the Christopher Nolan movie. So.
I'm very excited for it.
Yeah, no. Give me...
Everyone and their mother, is it going to be in it? I'm really excited.
Huey from The Boys is going to be in it.
Yes.
His career's taken off so much. Yeah, I love it.
He is going to be in it.
Yeah, no. Not Randy Quaid. What's the kid's name?
Dennis.
Jack Quaid.
Yes. Yeah. You're a big Dennis.
Dennis Quaid. There you go.
There was a Dennis in there somewhere. No, yeah, to me, give me really, really significant ghosts. Let's make it happen. Let's educate the populace. Yeah. Let's go.
Who are they educating exactly, though? Like,
the poorest.
They're teaching at a community college.
Yeah, exactly. This is
at a ghost community college taught by
Joseph Stalin,
Oppenheimer,
all
the greats.
Hitler.
Hitler's a very special class. Like that's upper division is Hitler.
Jesus.
Yeah.
Great. I love it if he's teaching like a different. He's teaching like improv or something. Yeah. Like
he's teaching art. Is what he's teaching. Teaching art. That's good.
Wow.
Hitler's teaching art. They're like, no, sir, you're staying away from social studies.
I had to stop from, like, busting out just, like, a really bad German accent for a bit right now, and I had to
come on.
No.
Give us the bit.
No.
Give us the bit. Let's hit the bit.
Nope.
Unlock that door.
Burns.
Nope, not today. I am not drunk enough.
Oh, Jesus.
Do not hide it in the attic, Alex.
We're going to a bar after this. I want to hear that fucking bit. In the middle of the cauldron.
Oh, yeah. Great. Cool.
Yeah.
She's our friend visiting from Germany.
Guten Tag.
It's almost there.
I feel like you can pull it off.
Yeah, she's got it.
The
blonde hair helps.
Yeah.
So, back on it. Kill the film.
Oh, yeah. Back to the actual non-topic. For me, it was the kill in the beginning.
Oh, the heart.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And the friend, like, it was just like it sets the tone for the movie.
It
That's
really
true.
Does.
I was going to say the friend dies because of the shards of glass that fall down.
It's a twofer.
It's a Drew Barrymore level kill.
Yeah.
For sure. Yeah.
Like, it could have immediately cut to just, like, Suspiria. And I would have been like, cool.
That was fucking awesome. Yeah.
You're like, was that a Wes Craven move right there? Oh, he wasn't even doing movies back. Okay, cool.
Fine. Tight.
Yeah. Oh, no, he was doing it, but still, whatever. We'll talk about that later. Sanchez, what'd you think?
I mean, I love that first one, too.
Mm-hmm.
I would have to say maybe the barbed wire kill.
That was my kill. That's my kill.
That is such a good one.
That's my kill.
Rough.
Yeah,
well, you get a close-up of, like, the human setting, and then that was pretty gnarly, because you also see, like, the skin kind of, like...
It separates.
It's still,
in
like...
such a zippery
and it's a practical
fashion.
Effect, and so it looks very real, and, like... You feel it, kind of, like...
Oh, yeah. The last part, I see the opening of the slit, and I look away.
Yeah.
I'm like, Ninja Turtles, that's it, Teenage Mutant.
Rocking in the corner.
Crying.
That's not happening.
Well, I'm like murdering the Foot Clan.
Stop being.
But no, it has like a really nightmarish quality, and like the way she jumps and she doesn't expect the barbed wire pit.
Yeah, okay. I would love to for someone to explain to me why there's a barbed wire pit in the.
Yeah. Why do they have that trap?
Because the Academy is a video game level. Just done as an academy.
They have defenses set up, I guess.
She literally went to the last level, the highest point, and she beat all the NPCs. She's good. She got it.
Okay,
she's
fine.
The one up.
So,
I was gonna say barbed wire, but you know what? It still might kill the film, but honorable mention: dog fucking massacre.
Yes,
dog massacre to the boy in the middle of the fucking Louvre, wherever the fuck he was.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, that was a really good kill. And also, I do like that the dog was eating and pulling out flesh off screen.
Yeah.
Like the body was
like
off screen.
You see the tendons being like pulled by the dog.
A lot of good kills. A lot of good kills.
No, that's great.
Place. Yeah.
I think those are the three, though. Like, I think that's it.
Okay, but still very good kills.
Those are three very good kills.
Awesome.
Three very strong kills, for sure.
Yeah.
Now, let's bring her back around. What would you rate Suspiria out of 5 aggressive ballet teachers? Alex, Adrian, whoever wants to take it first. Webster, go for it.
Okay, I always rate lowest.
I know you do. That's why we're definitely gonna build up for sure.
It's gonna go up.
I'm gonna give it a 4.
A 4 is great.
Not even that
that's a
low.
Good review.
That's awesome.
Remember, 4 counts as a great movie, and that's the cusp of a great movie, right?
Put
there.
That shit on Letterboxd. Bumped up the score like 4.1.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know? It's a 4 for me.
It's a 4?
I think I would do better, or I think I'd rate it higher, 1, rewatching it, and 2, watching it in 1 consecutive sitting, because I broke it up.
My 3rd was also broken up, actually.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, I totally agree, because my gut says 5 out of 5, but sitting through it and actually having to watch it all...
That
it does take a little dip. It takes a dip there.
Mm-hmm.
It is rough.
It takes a dip, for sure.
It's rough.
And so I would give it like a 4.5, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Sure, okay.
Because that's it is rough.
Respectable. I just think it's so funny where it's just like, oh, you just happen to be at this psychologist, like, convention. Also, my colleague, come here. He'll tell you everything you need
to
know.
He's an expert on witches,
sir,
by the way.
What?
Help us set up the 3rd act, sir.
Yeah.
Help us set up the 3rd act.
He might as well have been like, hey, tell me everything I need to know going into the 3rd act.
Yeah.
Oh, of course, my good lady.
Yes.
Yeah,
by the way, misogyny.
Yeah, by the way. If it bleeds for 7 days and doesn't die, kill it.
Yeah.
Like, he might as well have said that. Like,
right? Like, just in general, like, all the dialogue in that scene is very dry and, like...
Yeah.
It's
it derails
great.
A little
bit.
Yeah,
it definitely, like, kills the momentum of the movie a little bit,
yeah.
I think.
I'm gonna go... I'm actually going 4.8. So, I know it's very obscure. I usually go 4.75 when it gets that close, but 4.8...
Nice.
I don't know why I feel like a 7's not enough. To me, from 3rd watch...
And a 5's not enough?
Not quite a 5, because that scene you're talking about actually makes... It really does, like...
It takes you out of it!
It's kind
of
like... Okay, so like in A Knight's Tale... To me, A Knight's Tale is a 5 out of 5 movie, but there's still that scene before, like, the reveal, like, that he's actually royalty, where there's, like, a 10 minutes of exposition out of fucking nowhere. Which I'm like, why? Why are we slowing down right now? This movie was hot shit
I
up until this
I think I've forgotten
point.
The scene, just because it's, like, a perfect film for me, so, like,
but there's, like...
I've, like, cropped it out because
it's
I'm just
not
like,
even 10, it's probably like 5,
edited.
But it's enough where I'm just like, why did you stop here? Why did you stop here?
Oh, when he's like in the...
Right before he's in the little shack.
So when he's
thing.
Like on the underground thing?
Yeah, around there. Around
I don't even, I couldn't even tell you what happened.
You forget it.
Yeah.
You forget it.
It's
and that's how you forget about this one too.
Every
true.
Other scene is perfect.
A plus. That's why it's not a 5, but it's so close to a 5. It's so close to a 5.
We were saying this at Ren Faire. Knight's Tale Zerk.
I'm fucking down. I will host it on my projector. I want everybody
Knight's
in my apartment. We're gonna get turnt. Let's go.
Yeah, in your freaking oven of an apartment.
Yeah, dude, we're gonna be drunk. They'll be fine.
Sweat it out.
We'll sweat it out. Let me go. Everybody sober up before they drive out. It'll be perfect. No, this is so close to a 5. It's like right at the cusp of a 5. Just not quite there. But that still means it's a brilliant ass movie. It's just brilliant. And I love it so much.
I mean, it's really good.
Yeah, it really is.
Yeah, really good. And it gets better with every rewatch. I might make it a 5 on number 4. We'll see.
We'll see.
We'll see.
All right. That was Suspiria from 1977. Thank you so much, everyone, for listening. Let's see. Next week.
That's right.
We are having another returning guest.
Oh, a fun. I know she's going to like love talking about this.
This is going to be a fun one. I'm really excited to talk about it. Adrian actually is the one who was just like, you need to watch this movie.
I loved it. And I was like, you guys have to talk.
Wait, I told you about this shit, didn't I?
He did. He did.
Yeah.
And then, but then he told me.
Yes.
And he was just like, you need to watch it.
I was
and
like,
then
I have to spread the word.
And then as I was watching it, I remember texting you and I was like, what the fuck? Yeah. What the fuck?
It's awesome.
So we are talking about a 2022 release.
That's right.
Next week. I'm so excited.
I can't wait.
It's going to be great. So join us next week for that. And if you like what you heard, please make sure you are subscribed wherever you are listening. We are on pretty much every single social media or like podcasting platform. Make sure you're subscribed there. And if you could take a couple moments and make sure you have left us a rating on either Spotify or iTunes.
Adrian, leave us a rating.
Or
1 star.
Oh, bitch, no.
5 stars. Or left us a review on iTunes. That would mean the absolute world to us. It does help other people find the podcast. And just overall bolster our spirits.
It warms our days, for sure.
So... please do that. And then if you want to stay up to date on the latest and greatest on all of our podcast shenanigans, you can find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are on Facebook and Twitter at Horror People Pod, and we are on Instagram at Horrible People's Podcast. That is HORROR BLE People's Podcast. You can find Anthony on Twitter and Instagram at Hyrulean Hustler.
Mm-hmm.
And you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Ghost Coffee Shop. Is there anything you'd like to promote, say, shout out, Adrian, before we close out?
I'd just like to say thank you. I love this movie. I appreciate being here.
It was super fun.
Yeah.
Thanks for coming back.
Another good round, I'm telling you. Get him in Phil for the fucking Blade 2.
Yeah.
we'll
make it happen.
If you want me back, start writing those letters.
Yeah, there you go.
Write the letters.
Leave a 5-star review.
All right, so until next time, if you get a letter inviting you to a different country to dance, consider staying home.
Or dance in your room.
Yeah. Dance like nobody's watching.
That's right.
Bye, guys.
See ya.